Okay, I'd like to welcome everyone to tonight's meeting of the Board of Selectmen of the Town of Shebig Island. It's Wednesday, December 16th, 2020. It's now 6:03 PM. David, are you recording?
I am indeed, thank you.
And I would like to start by calling the meeting to order. And the first thing we'll do is do a roll call. So just a second, I'm gonna change into a gallery view so I can see everybody at the same time. All right, so Mr. Beaupre.
Here.
Mr. Corson.
You're muted.
Sorry, here.
Mr. Dyer.
Here.
Mr. Hill.
Here.
Ms. Damon is here. Ms. Alphont.
Here.
And Mr. Poria.
Here.
Okay, so we can all see each other, we can all hear each other, and right now we have how many in the peanut gallery, David?
We have 8 attendees.
Okay, great. So we're going to start off with public comments for items that are not on the agenda. And is there anyone, if you'd put your hand up, the attendees, we will be happy to call on you if you have something you'd like to bring up.
Not okay. Seeing any hands.
All right, seeing none. I'm just going to, this is kind of a public service announcement because under public discussion, we often have people who have ideas or something that they think needs to be done in town. And I just wanted to remind people that we have something that is called the, it's a policy for proposals to the Board of Selectmen. And so if people are interested in getting something on the agenda or moving forward on some idea, you can find this on the website, and it outlines exactly what you need to do to actually put something together. And so I'm just going to read to you the purpose for the record. The Board of Selectmen encourages municipal entities, private or civic organizations, and citizens to make formal recommendations to the board for their consideration. Recommendations come out of the budget process, public hearings, or comments at public meetings. However, they sometimes come as spontaneous ideas and sometimes come out of context and may get lost in the process. The selectmen wish to provide an option for a slightly more formalized recommendation process that would help to keep good ideas afloat. This policy outlines the guidelines for a formal recommendation to or a request for action from the Board of Selectmen. The purpose of this policy is to assure that the board will take timely action regarding all recommendations that meet the guidelines in Section 5. So that's just to let you know, people who have ideas, that that is the most efficient way to get your idea to the Board of Selectmen. All right, one more shot. Anybody have something they want to say from the public? Okay, seeing none, we're moving on to the Town Administrator's report.
So I submitted a memo to you all outlining the various things that are going on. I'll just quickly go through that for those that didn't see it already or read it. The electrical upgrades for the compactor were completed on 12/10. I've been in contact with the installer of the compactor. They're all set to come out. They were hoping to come on the 29th, but the tides are not conducive to that. So we're looking sometime either the first or second week of January. I'm not sure yet when we'll have a high tide in the morning and the afternoon. So hopefully they can come out and leave in the same day. Otherwise they would have to return over a 2-day period. So I'm still working that out. I approved the replacement of the roof at the landfill shed there where Gail resides during the day. That work has not been scheduled. Down to the stone wharf, the electrical panel was blown off the post in the last storm we had, so I authorized the replacement, basically the entire setup. The electrical panel is not capable of being closed unless it has a wire going through it, and since it is a publicly used panel, I didn't think, basically due to safety concerns, that we should have a panel that can be secured so people can't get their fingers in where the circuit breakers are. The floats were removed the first week in December, and the two punt floats were left in as the board instructed. The next issue I'd like to bring up is the spare ambulance. There was some discussion about that being located over at the transfer station in the location where the metal dumpster is. The metal dumpster is where the new compactor is going to be located. Originally, the new compactor was going to be located for a lack of a better way to describe it, where Gail parks her car generally, right next to the shed. Originally, that's where that was going to be located, but there is a catch basin that's right behind there that catches the water and all the leakage from the trash area right there. And it was decided it wasn't ideal to have the compactor roll over that cover on a regular basis going forward, just in a fear that it might ruin the flange on that manhole cover or that drain lid. So unless we want to move a different bin outside, which would then be a problem for snow and things like that, I had a meeting with Ralph and Steve of the fire department, and I suggested that, or I asked them whether they would be okay with placing a soft shelter next to the fire department where the ambulance is currently located, and Ralph seemed to be okay with that suggestion. I think the idea is that it would be easier if the ambulance was located next to the fire department in the event they had to use it in some kind of an emergency. They wouldn't have to travel up to the transfer station, bring it down, and then transfer the medicines over into the new into the second ambulance from the new ambulance and that type of thing. It'd be easier if it was right there at the facility when they needed it. I estimate we could get one of these for around $1,500. There might be a little shipping that might exceed that, but that would be plenty large to be set up. I talked to Ralph. He thinks that the fire department staff could set it up, but I offered assistance from DPW if they need any other help from town staff. So if they do, then Chuck and Doug could go over there, I think, and assist them and set that up. I think we could do it without hiring anybody. It's just one of those soft shelters with the metal frame and the soft sides. We'd get one that was had a round roof, so we wouldn't have so much snow build up on it, obviously. It would be a temporary solution to the problem, but these things do tend to last unless you have a major storm or something where the wind really gets to it. They would probably last several years, giving us time to figure out maybe another location in the future. So I guess I'll pause there before I move on to the next item for your discussion, whether you think that that is a solution or you have another idea.
I think that sounds great, Justin. Is the money in the fire department budget where we'd be able to find that money?
I think we could get it all out of the fire department budget. At this time, I would want to converse a little more with Ralph, but he usually has a little bit of money left over at the end of the year that he tries to use to defer future expenses, whether they be radios that are failing, things like that. He tries to do at the end of the year, but I think that we may be able to make that work. And if not, I think there's sufficient monies in some of the other facilities accounts that we could probably move some around to make it work.
Thank you. Bo, and then David, and then Jay.
I vaguely remember okaying or voting for a certain amount of money, and then if I remember correctly, we had voted a little extra to possibly get one of those temp shelters and stuff. I didn't know if we still had money that we voted on to spend on this. Do you understand? I don't know if everybody understands what I'm saying. But
I understand what you mean. I don't. There was something in building maintenance or something like that that might be.
I'd have to go back and. I vaguely remember.
Okay, David, Jay, and then Mark.
Well, Bo, I think, said basically what I was going to say. And so I'd like to make a motion that Justin look and see, check the old minutes and see if we've authorized money from any other source, and if we have, proceed with the structure, whatever we want to call that. And if not, I would move that we authorize Justin to take $1,500 out of the fire rescue budget in order to accomplish this project. That's a motion.
That's a motion. Is there a second before I go to Jay? Mark's going to second it. Okay.
I'll second it. I just want to make sure that the amount, 1500, is not too restrictive in case you need 2000.
Good point.
Yeah. I think it might cost more. Jay.
A couple of points. One, when you buy these like ShelterLogic buildings, make sure you buy the heavier duty cover. A, they actually insure it. They actually will give you a guarantee on it for a certain number of years. And since this is likely to be around for a while, it's worth the extra money to buy the heavier duty covers. They come in several different levels. And you can, in the end, save a lot of money by buying the heavier duty.
Jay, would this be similar to the one you put in at the Historical Society?
Yes.
Yeah, because that has really held up. You did a great job. If anybody needs help, Jay is really good at putting these up.
Well, I've bought a few over the time.
Yeah.
The key is the weight of the cover. The frames are pretty much all the same. I mean, they do get a little heavier duty or not, but it's the weight of the fabric on the cover.
I just know that's held up. Do you remember how many years ago you did that?
All the difference in the world.
Jay?
That's 3 or 4 years ago now.
Yeah, and it's perfect now. I mean, I shouldn't say anything because we're going to have a storm, but it's in good shape. David?
I'd like to amend my motion and ask Jay what number he'd like to put in there in place of 1500.
I can't answer that really because I'm not quite sure the dimensions of the structure.
Well, maybe 2500 to be safe.
Justin, when you looked at this, you know, if you just call ShelterLogic.
Yeah, that's who I looked at for the one, but yep.
Okay, if you call them up, as opposed to just going online and trying to look through 3,500 variations. Just call them up, tell them what you need, and tell them what fabric, you know, ask what the fabric.
Tell them Jay sent you.
Just fine.
Okay.
So David, maybe you should say up to a certain amount of money.
Yeah, I'm going to say up to 2,500. I think that should be a sufficient, I would hope that's a sufficient cushion. What do you think, Jay?
Well, the one at the Historical Society, I spent 2,500, something like that. But that included the platform and the underpinnings to the platform, and then the actual fabric building on top of that. And I think the fabric building itself, now that building is not big enough to cover the ambulance. You need something that's a little, width is fine, but it needs to be taller.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that would be a little more expensive. My guess is a couple of grand ought to cover it.
So let me make
that's it
500 to be safe.
Yeah, up to 2,500.
Yeah.
Okay, Chris, do you have that?
And Mark has to.
Yeah, and Mark needs to second.
Are you okay with changing that? Okay, anyone else on the board before I go to the public? Mark.
Just very quickly, Donna, I think what Bo was referring to was when we took the $40,000 out of the fire truck reserve fund to purchase the new rescue vehicle, we thought that there was gonna be an extra, I'm gonna say $3,000 or $4,000 left for possibly looking at purchasing what we're talking about right now. But I believe that Ralph can confirm this, but I believe they ran into some extra expense of outfitting the new rescue with radios and stuff like that.
Talking.
So it ate
yeah,
that
I think
up.
They used all the money. Yeah, I think so. Anyone else on the board before I go to the public? Anyone on the public who want to weigh in on this question? Okay, I don't see any hands. So let's, Mark?
Yeah, just one more thing very quickly. You may want to just give some quick consideration of considering trying to anchor a building like this if you get it put up next to the fire station down through the pavement into the dirt, only because they're prone to moving and flying around if the wind does get to them.
They usually come with augers.
Okay, so I'm going to do a roll call vote. And Chris, you have this all set? Good. Mr. Beaupre?
Yes.
Mr. Corson?
Yes.
Mr. Dyer?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Damon is yes, it's unanimous. And I'd like to commend Justin for identifying the problem and solving it.
Thank you. So I'll go. We all set to go on to my last item here. I've got two more items, but the last one that was on the memo. Yeah.
Bo has his hand up.
Justin, I just had a couple questions for you before we move on. The what was I going to say? The shed roof for the transfer station.
Yes.
Where's the money going to come out of for that one?
There's money in the facilities line for that.
Okay. And the stone.
It's only about $400.
Okay. The stone wharf one, where'd that one come out of?
We will take that out of one of the facilities maintenance lines, depending on, I'm not trying to be vague, but just depending on how much money we have at the end of the year will depend on whether it's in the general facilities line or whether we take it from either Chuck's budget or something like that.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, next item.
Okay, the next item was at the last meeting, there was a discussion that was brought up under public comment about the additional bay in the decontamination room on the fire department. And I was asked to look into whether we had any quotes or any additional information. And as what's been shared previously with the board is we have a bid for $186,000 from a contractor that was simply for the additional bay. It didn't include the decon room. My understanding is that the facility overall, the electrical capacity on the fire station town hall building is at its max capacity and that we can't add any more electrical items to that without an upgrade to that panel. So in thinking about that, the concern is if we were to just move forward with an extra bay on the fire station, that when we may have to upgrade some of those facility-wide things, either the electrical panel or the heating system, or who knows what else might come along when you start doing some type of construction. So my suggestion would be to look at the facility as a whole. I know that originally the current town hall facilities were meant to be a temporary solution to what was needed for the long-term needs of the town. So I would hate for us to just look at one aspect of that facility and then really limit us going forward. I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows, you know, whether the town office should stay in that facility, but I think that we should look at it overall. Perhaps the entire facility could be upgraded at once, where the town hall could be expanded either out further to one side or the other, the fire station could be expanded, and then the whole thing could be evaluated about whether it's going to meet the needs of the town going forward. There is $35,000 in the new town hall reserve fund. I think that it is a legitimate use of those funds to look at the facility overall. I know the funds are designated for a new town hall for planning or construction or whatever you want to do for that. But I think that since the facilities share the same facility, it would be a legitimate expense to use that to do some type of a study over whether the building could meet the future needs, whether it meets the current needs, and then it would give us a better idea of where the town should move forward, whether it be with a town hall or with adding on the fire station bay. I think that I spoke to the town manager of Oakland simply because I'm familiar that in that town in the past 5 or 6 years, they've built a new fire station, a police station, and now they're moving on building a new town hall. They had very inadequate facilities for all three, and they've used the same consultant for all three of those. And I tend to think that if a town has kept somebody on for three separate projects, that they've been satisfied with the work. I talked to the town manager there, and he said that all three of those projects have come in under budget. So I just thought that maybe we could use somebody like that person. Maybe there's a different one that you're all comfortable with for Shabig. But perhaps we could use some of that $35,000 to engage either a consultant slash architect to come up with some conceptual plans of what the entire facility is capable of and or what it might be able to look like to meet the town's needs going into the future.
Thank you, Justin. Again, you've discovered a problem and come up with a suggestion for a solution. So that's a good thing. So I guess really the question is, do we want to put this on a future agenda item as a future agenda item to really talk about it? We're not really prepared to discuss this tonight, but is this something in January that we would want to talk about and see the possibility of looking at the building, you know, as a whole, creating a building committee? You know, we could flesh it out at that time. I don't want to get into the minutia tonight, but do we want, I guess my question is, do we want to add this to an agenda in January?
I would think so.
I would say so.
You agree? Is the consensus that this would be something we'll talk about in a few next month?
Yes.
Anybody opposed to that? Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Justin. You said you had one more thing that wasn't on the report.
Yeah, I had one more thing that I wanted to bring up. President Trump designated Christmas Eve as a federal holiday, and I was on the Southern Maine managers meeting yesterday, and several of the towns in Southern Maine are giving they're considering that to be a holiday for town employees, specifically Cumberland and Yarmouth and Standish, I know, are going to close on Christmas Eve basically as a holiday. Some of it is just out of, I would say, compassion for the stuff that the town office staff has had to deal with over the past year, dealing with COVID, and just giving them that extra day, just knowing everything that they've had to be open when some others were not. So I just wanted to put that out there to see whether the board was okay with me closing the town office on Christmas Eve or not.
Thank you. I'd welcome a motion. David?
Yeah, well, if it's all right with Christine, I'd like to move that the town office be closed on Christmas Eve, Christmas Eve day.
Except for Christine, she should be there.
Would someone like to second that?
I'll second.
Sorry.
Okay. I guess I should clarify before the vote, do you want this just to apply to the town office staff, or can we give this to all of the town staff on that day?
I would make it all town staff.
All town okay. staff, unless Thank there's you. A snowstorm, and then they're going to get double pay, so that will be even better.
Yeah, okay.
I would say all town staff. David, will you amend your motion to say that?
I thought I did. Probably okay. didn't get heard, but yes.
Yeah. Okay, and Mark, you're okay with that?
Yeah.
All right, anyone else have a comment before I go to the public? All right, is there anyone in the public who would like to talk about whether the town staff has the day off on Christmas Eve? Seeing no hands, I'm going to call for a vote. Mr. Beaupre?
Yes, so that means you'll be there on Christmas instead, right?
No, the handbook says that's a day off.
So, Mr. Beaupre, is your name Grinch or Scrooge? I just want to know which one you are. Mr. Corson?
Yes.
Mr. Dyer?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Damon is yes. And I want to thank the town staff for all they have done and how loyal they have been through this COVID experience from top to bottom. Thank you. Anything else on the town administrator's report?
Oh, that's it for that.
Okay. Do you have a treasurer's report?
The treasurer report, I will have to get you the next meeting. We did not receive the sweep account, which is where the majority of the money ends up. I did not receive the statement until today, and okay. I didn't have a chance to reconcile that. So I will bring that to you for your next meeting.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Anyone have a question of the town administrator before we let him off the hook? Okay, seeing none, let's go on to regular business. To hear a recommendation from the Tax Acquired Property Committee, lot 103-8. And we raised this last meeting, but we really didn't have a chance to have it on the agenda. So Jay, I'd like to turn it over to you.
Thank you. The Tax Acquired Property Committee met first of all, has everybody read my minutes that I sent out?
I have.
Yes or no? Okay, good. Two things. The tax acquired policy to keep people in.
Are you frozen?
It's not basically set up for raw property without a house on it. So with that in mind, the committee's suggestion essentially is that, one, we finish the foreclosure process so that we actually own it. Once we actually own it, the next step should be that we do whatever we need to finish up the drainage issue between Jackson and what's his name?
Riley.
Yeah, Riley. So that if we need to put easements and so forth on the property to finish that off. But instead of just dumping the water down there, that this is, gives us the opportunity to actually complete everything. Next, go to the town assessor and ask her to revalue the property given the changes that have been made. And at that point, we can offer it for sale. The issue is basically currently it's evaluated at $60,000, assessed at $60,000 plus, and it's a little less than 3/4 acre of wetland. So it's not worth anything like what the assessed value is. So our recommendation is step one, actually complete the foreclosure process. Two, take care of the drainage issue.
You're frozen.
Two people and continue on down. Okay, you can't hear me?
I can now.
Okay. David, do something about my internet.
Coming up.
David's blacked out. I don't know what happened to him.
I know. I didn't
you didn't pay the light bill.
That's it.
So let me start over quickly. One, foreclose. Two, continue the easements and drainage project down through so we get the water in an organized fashion down over to the next step. And then after that, we go to the assessor, ask for a revaluation of the property, at which point in time we can put it up for sale. If the revaluation, you know, suggests that it's can be sold for anything like, you know, what she assesses it at.
Did you consider the possibility of doing a soils test just to see that to rule out the possibility that there was some spot on it? Because I know it originally, it abuts Lindy Smith's property, and originally it was laid out, there was a schoolhouse there, and after there was a schoolhouse, there was a blacksmith shop. Now, you know, that doesn't mean it wasn't too wet for them to be there, because they would have had an outhouse with a schoolhouse and probably with the blacksmith shop.
Yeah, but that's not recent, is it?
What, pardon me?
That's not recent, is it?
No, it isn't recent, but it's still the same land. Nobody's done anything different. I'm just...
The point that I'm getting at is it's basically a soggy bog.
Well, if you look across from Wessel's driveway, that part, you know, I just didn't know if it was worth having somebody come look at it.
I think that the part of the point is that the committee thought about was that completing the drainage project made a lot of sense.
Because I agree with that. I'm just
otherwise, because right now the way it's property and there. I mean, that's the way it's been left. So yeah. The point is that if we actually manage the water, once it hits that property down to the next point where it drains across the road, then we'll know where we stand with things.
Well, I think that where it's going to go across the road is not part of that property. That's part of Riley.
Right. But we get it to a point where it's not impacting anybody.
Oh, so you're saying because we already have it designed and we already have it written out and the easement's drafted. So you're suggesting that we do a different drainage in a different way?
No, what I'm suggesting is Bo, correct me if I'm wrong, please, but essentially what was happening was the water was coming down. It was going to get dumped into that property. And I'm suggesting that what we do is we continue to manage the water down to a point where we get it under the road, and then we'll take a look and see what the value of the property is at that point. Because remember, you can't sell the property for less than the assessed value, which is currently at 60 grand, and it's no more worth 60 grand than I don't know what. It's not even close.
Okay, so does. So I guess the next step would be to have a motion to direct the town administrator to finish the foreclosure process. That's step one, right?
I would think so. I mean, it's already in process and it takes time.
Right. And in the meantime...
Well, if it's already in process, we don't need to do a motion.
No.
Right. Correct.
Okay, so we don't need a motion then. All right, so it's really just updating us, letting us know when that has happened. But in the meantime, we're going to go forward. If we're able to have a town meeting next spring and we don't have this done, we would still go forward with those easements, right, that we already have drafted? Okay.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, Justin.
Yeah, basically completing the foreclosure process is just a function of most of the time you let the lien go to foreclosure, but the town takes no action. So it sits there, it's in foreclosure. MMA generally says, don't do anything with it unless you are going to take an action further on, because once you, if I were to go file a deed or something to make it clear that the town wanted it, then it becomes town property and then we're liable for whatever's there. On this property, there isn't anything there, so there isn't a building or anything that we have to concern ourselves with. So really it's just a matter of recording a deed, if you want to say that the town is going to take possession. The other option is just to leave it in its current state, and when you go to convey it, we would just quit claim deed it to somebody else, which is really the cleanest way to do it, because then the town isn't in the position of having to warranty a deed. If there's any flaw in our foreclosure process, it becomes the next owner's problem and not the town's to defend.
So that sounds like that right now, then we can, do we have enough stake in it that we could actually drain water on it? And
we can do whatever we want at this point, there is the risk in theory that if there was an error at some point during the foreclosure process, that the previous owner still would have right to recapture that property. So in theory, there could be damages to that owner if we did something to it that took away some value of the property, and we did that while it was in our possession. If there was something wrong with the foreclosure process, there is a small amount of liability there. You all would have a better feel about whether you think that the owner has any actual interest in coming back on it or not. It's really just a judgment call about what your risk aversion is to a property like this, really.
Well, the owner's not responding to anything he's received from us.
So he probably doesn't want it. So there's probably very little risk, but there is one. I just want to make it clear that it is
right.
It is possible. Yeah.
Okay, so what's the next step? Is it to look at the drainage easements and see how it works? I mean,
are you asking me?
I'm asking somebody. What do we do next? Does the town meeting have to accept for a foreclosed property?
No. Generally, a town does not accept a foreclosed property. It allows the automatic foreclosure to go into effect, and then when it sells it or conveys it to somebody else, it quitclaim deeds that property to the next owner. So basically, the town is saying, as far as we know, we own it and we're selling it to you. But if there's something wrong with us taking possession of it, that's on the new owner. It's not on us.
But I think the town meeting has to vote to convey it to somebody else.
Yes, that is correct. But it would generally just be a quick claim deed. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Now, so everybody happy of where we are with this right now?
Mm-hmm. Justin, a quick question.
Sure.
Is if we continue the drainage process project down through that property, do we need to put easements in place to do so?
If you are going to convey the land afterwards, it would probably be a good idea, because the next owner, in theory, could discontinue whatever
right.
you put
that's,
in.
That's what I was thinking was the case. So
yes,
we should look at putting easements on that property, at least at the point where we know that we absolutely own it. Because the way our policy is written, it's sort of an almost forever policy in terms of the original owner's ability to come back and say, oh, by the way, I think I will pay the back taxes on it, and or I'd like to work a deal out with you. I mean, it's not quite so cut and dry as there's a deadline, boom, bang, done.
Well, Jay, where are we with those deadlines where they have an opportunity to get in touch with us? And it wasn't it like 90 days? And if they didn't, they gave up their rights to negotiate?
They give up their rights, but they have the right to sort of come back and have a conversation about it. I mean, it's.
But that's only six months. So when do we actually foreclose on it?
You've already foreclosed on it. It's just that the town's policy is it allows the previous landowner to come back to the town and ask for it back if they pay the money.
Right.
Town owns the property.
When did we actually foreclose? Because then that starts the clock ticking for 6 months, I think. I think after 6 months, they have no standing according to that policy.
Well, it took with the other piece that we took by foreclosure, that was a 2.5 year process.
I know, that's why
we were totally clear.
That's why I'm wondering why this is so quick.
That's my question as well.
I don't have the dates in front of me right now. I can look that up and I can let you know what the foreclosure
is. This is my suggestion that we authorize Justin to contact Natalie Burns, our town attorney, and make sure that we are following whatever we need to do and however long this is going to take before we do anything. I don't think we need a motion to that effect, but does that make sense? Okay. Yeah. So you'll report back when you have more information, right?
Yes. I can look it up. I think I can probably ascertain all these dates on my own if you're okay with that. But if I need the attorney, I will certainly contact them.
That's the okay. Report.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay.
Okay, great. All right. And thank you again, Jay, for your work. And we'll be back to you, I'm sure, soon about this. Okay, the next item on the agenda is to consider surveying the community to determine interest in revisiting the issue of broadband on Chibig Island. So this came about I'm going to give some history. There was a specific broadband proposal that was defeated at town meeting a couple of years ago. Since that time, several new models based on have been developed and based, and we were, there was a presentation by the Island Institute telling us what some other islands had done. We had a discussion at the last meeting regarding broadband, and the suggestion was made to poll the community to see if they would want the town to research options. In the meantime, we got a letter from residents at the West End, which I will read in a minute, about this issue. And to that end, I'll read the letter first. December 3rd, 2020. Dear Board of Selectmen members, during a five-day period last month, a resident at Bennett's Cove Road experienced difficulties with the internet system. For 3 days, the system worked sporadically at best. For 2 days, it did not work at all. The deficiency with the internet system on the island's west end are well known and have been discussed and considered for improvement for some time now. Increasing use of the internet in our daily lives now makes it very important to focus on this issue. There is no question that the pandemic has made the need for a reliable internet system much greater than ever before. Below are for some examples. Dissemination of information to the public, including general and specific to our island, COVID education, emergency notifications, boat cancellations, blocked roads, etc. Telemedicine, while the pandemic will subside, telemedicine is likely to stay. Medicine refills, status checks and refills, as well as delivery status. Remote learning, this may become more routine going forward. Remote work, this is more likely to continue. Financial transactions and document signing, Zoom and other platforms for meetings and social interaction, more year-round residents using the internet, access to stable internet services required by seasonal renters, providing access to daily news and entertainment for all, shopping, groceries, and other goods. The transition to a new and viable internet system will take time. Given that, we urge you to revisit this important issue now, making the transition to a new system a near-term priority. Thank you. Sincerely, Rodney Harrington, Greg Hanscom, Vail Trainer, and Jackie Trask. And so I guess, really the question here tonight is, do we want to go forward with a non-binding referendum to get the pulse of the community to see if they want us to spend time studying various options and funding sources and relating to broadband on Chibig. And if that is the case, that we decide we want to go forward with that, we probably need three different motions. One would be to hold it at the at the polls on January 26, 2021. The second would be, and that would be the non-binding referendum. And the second would be to also have a SurveyMonkey non-binding survey so that we could find out what people who are not here now, non-residents, thought about it. And thirdly, then, look, it actually accepts some language that a referendum might say. And I'm just going to read something that I have jotted off, and people are more than welcome to edit it if we get to that point. So I had an explanation. Given that the majority of Maine islands have either implemented broadband plans or are in the process of refining them, that these island communities have used a variety of broadband infrastructure and funding models, and that as a result of the pandemic, the state and federal governments are making more funding opportunities available, the Shebig Board of Selectmen is polling the community to see if the town should research and evaluate these and various other options to determine if there is a cost-effective way to bring broadband to Shebig. So that would be the explanation on the non-binding referendum. And the question would be, put an X in the box. I support the town researching various broadband plans and possible funding opportunities, or I do not support the town researching various broadband plans and funding opportunities. And I guess I'm advocating for doing this because I think that before we have anybody, you know, try to ask people to put their time into something, we want to know that there's an interest in the community, or there isn't an interest in the community. And I think we're in a different place, and there, I don't know about any of you, but I was impressed with some of the things that have happened on other islands, what they have done, different ways they've handled this. And I think it's worth at least asking the community what they think and see if they've changed their minds. So I'm opening up for discussion. Well,
in your email, Donna, you mentioned number the to do following three motions. Number three is to use the following language for non-binding referendum and Survey Monkey.
Right.
What language?
The language that comes below it.
That she just read.
That I just read, where it says explanation.
But if you...
That would actually be the language.
So the first motion would just be to put it on the referendum. And then the third one would be to have the language that you put down there as the referendum.
Or if we amend it or whatever, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Now it does.
Jay.
Basically, when we went through this the last time, people were not against broadband. People were against spending $1,000,000, $1,500,000, $1,500,000, $1,600,000, whatever exactly the right that number was, by a 2-to-1 majority. The broadband committee did an incredible amount of work. They did a lot of surveys, and what they found out was that people really wanted broadband. What they didn't want was to have their taxes go up and the town pay for it. They wanted somebody to come in and invest in our community by building up the infrastructure. The deal on Long Island is working on, I guess it's a work in progress with Consolidated, basically would fulfill that function. I think going back and asking the people of the town again, if they want us to look at broadband, is sort of it's beating a dead horse. It's answering a question that's already been answered. The answer to that is yes, people want better broadband, particularly as we've gone through. How does it get paid for? They want a better funding model. They want us to come back, I think, with something that makes sense and is financially rational, which the earlier was not.
Well, you know, I'm perfectly fine with if this board feels that we have enough input from the community. The only reason I did this is because we had pushback last year when we put the $10,000 into as just a holding to research it. We had people who voted against the capital budget because of it. Marjorie had concerns about me even raising it or having the Island Institute speak because she felt like she saw that as that people didn't want broadband. Now, I think what you just said, Jay, is really where people are. They didn't like that proposal. But if people think, if the rest of this board feels that we're in a place where, you know, we could go forward, we can add this on the agenda at the next meeting and talk about it, setting up a committee. But I'd like to hear from the rest of the board and see what they think. Mike?
Yeah, I agree with Jay. The $1.4 million, $1.5 million, whatever it was, that was the high percentage of the bad taste in people's mouth was that we didn't really, you know, have a great plan of how we were going to fit that into the tax burden and how we were going to fund it without, you know, increasing people's taxes and our budget expense. So I would kind of agree, Don. I appreciate your efforts and your thinking about, you know, thinking whether we need to take the pulse of the community again. I'm personally pretty comfortable putting this on an agenda to consider forming another small research group to take another look at broadband and all of the other models and options that are now, I guess, out there.
Great. Okay. Well, what do you think?
Well, I'm leaning towards you, Donna, believe it or not. mainly because of the explanation. I don't want to come back, like in the meeting, we set up a meeting to have another committee, broadband committee made up, and we get like 700 people on the meeting going, why are we looking at this again? And we only get the negative side of it. And then that explanation that you have that you read a while ago, that there is some new state funding, federal funding. That's why we're looking back into this. And we want the public to basically give us the okay if they want us to do it or not. So it's kind of a catch-22. Do you do it or not? But as far as information wise, I think that little referendum piece explains why we're looking into it once again.
And we can get that out there too. I mean, without having to do the referendum, but David, and then I'm going to go to we have members of the public here, so it will be great to hear what they have to say. Dave.
I agree with Jay. The biggest mistake that the last committee made was putting together a $1.4 million proposition. If we were doing it today, I would strongly recommend, and actually I wanted to do it this way to begin with, is that we bond it and we reduce the tax impact. And as has been mentioned, there's state and local and federal money coming forward so that the amount, we might not even have to bond it. We might be able to just expense it. Either way, the world has changed and it's changed in a way that's favorable towards doing such projects. And it's also changed in terms of the advisability and desirability among the population of doing such projects. So I agree with Jay and Mark. I think it just makes a lot of sense. Rather than learning what we think we already know, let's go ahead and put together a committee of new people, frankly, put out a call to service for some people to come forward and get this done. I think we'll come up with an entirely different proposition, a different proposal, and most likely a different result.
Thank you. Okay, Jay, and then I'm going to go to the public.
I would add that if we form a new committee, that's fine. I think that what we have to do is, as their mission statement, their directive, whatever we're going to call it, is that they find a way to finance it that basically isn't the town paying for the infrastructure unless the town, I mean, like in, with a consolidated.
Here's why we need more internet.
The town.
It's frozen again.
Yeah, I won't tell you what my speed. Karen checked my speeds and I won't tell you how ugly they were. Can anybody hear me now or?
Yes, yeah, you're okay, okay right now.
Okay, right at this moment in time. So my suggestion is if we reconstitute a committee, that we do so with a mission statement, which is to find a way to increase broadband availability on the island, whereby the town isn't basically buying the infrastructure and paying, and basically it shouldn't be on the town's back, it should be on the vendor's back.
So I would think we, if we decide to go forward with this idea, the town, the Board of Selectmen has a policy for setting up, how to set up a committee. And we can talk about, that would be when we talk about what the charge of the committee is. I don't know if we want to totally decide how it works before they even look at it. But anyway, that's what, it's a ways down the road. But I understand where you're coming from. Okay, let's look. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to talk about this issue? And so the question is, do we want to have a broadband non-binding referendum to find out if people are interested in moving forward with studying broadband? Or do we want to do what members of the board have said and just set up a committee? And so I see quite a few people on there, and I hope somebody raises their hand and tells us what you think. Because we're working in a vacuum. Okay, there. Beth Wiles.
All right.
Then Chip Emery.
Okay, let me, I'm trying to, what's the problem here? I'm trying to enable Beth. I'm gonna go to Chip first because Beth, for some reason, isn't working yet. I'll get to you next, Beth. You're available. But Chip can go at the moment.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, good. As a former member of the broadband committee, I have been haunted the last year or so as I've heard about a lot of the funding opportunities and seen other communities get them. So it does leave you with the takeaway that, we need to be, as a community, not sidelined. And that is done by showing, some level of commitment to funders. As far as the different options that are out there, I have been involved in some of the meetings and listened to them. And there are a variety of them without getting into them. I mean, I probably have more knowledge of them. So I don't want to jump to any conclusions, but I do agree with the intent to have a preconceived notion of what the solution is. I think limits what could happen with lastly I'd say that I think it's always good to have a little bit of a pulse. If the board's really behind it, that will help people I think understand it. But I think it's always good to have a little bit of a pulse. The more you know about what you're the people that you're designing this for and what they're saying, past votes aside and why they didn't like the first plan, the more you know about what they want now, I think the more information we'll have. So maybe something like a simple SurveyMonkey provides a lot of information for a little bit of effort.
That's a good idea. I mean, we don't have to have the referendum. Okay, the next person is Beth Wiles and then Gloria Brown.
Okay, Beth.
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yes,
we can.
Okay, hi everyone. I just want to say that I concur with Jay and Mark.
Oh, we just lost you, Beth.
Okay, she should be back now.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I concur with Jay and Mark and David, and I feel as though However, I feel as though the broadband committee that was before should be asked to also participate because they have experience and ideas. This is just a different direction in which you're going. And I think the majority of people would like to see options. So that's all I really have to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Beth. Gloria?
Okay. Gloria?
So I think a Survey Monkey would be appropriate, but not a referendum question. And then once you get the survey results, to go ahead with a committee if that's warranted.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Thank you, Gloria. All right, is there someone else? We have a lot of people on here who I know have opinions about a lot of things. And we really are asking for your opinion. We're honestly asking for your opinion tonight. Okay, Aaron Rue.
Go ahead. Go ahead,
Aaron. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Takes a minute to get to the unmute. I'm with Gloria. I think a Survey Monkey is a great idea. I really think you need to canvas what the priorities are. I'd be happy to help with lining up some of those questions for the community. I think it's really important that we don't just try to bankroll everything that comes our way. And I also think that broadband is very important. But I think people need to have some skin in the game. That's just how life works. And I really think that's very important for a community. If we want to keep it the quality that we have here and we're not going to turn it into Nantucket, we need to watch out what we spend. So I think the survey's a great idea first. And then on a side note, what I'd really like to see in this Zoom thing, and I don't know if it's possible because I'm not a big Zoom fan, is to see who else is at these meetings, because you can normally do that at a Board of Selectmen meeting. And I think we're missing a lot. Not that you people aren't all beautiful, but I would like to see who else is in the crowd. So those are my thoughts, and I'm happy to help out a little bit on this, but as you all know, I had some fairly strong feelings about how the last broadband proposition was made, and I do believe it's very important. I make my livelihood using the internet. So anyway, that's my point. Thank you.
Aaron, before you go, Aaron, I'd like to ask you, while I still have you, if you go down to the bottom of your screen, do you see something that says participants?
I do not, no.
Okay, that's a good point.
Oh, now the teacher's showing up who uses this way more than I do.
Hi, David. Suzanne.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. So we don't have the same view that I have when I have a school committee member. I do have that view where you can see all the participants. But when we have a meeting where we just, you know, zoom in like this, we can only see you guys and we don't have any options beyond chatting and raising your hand.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to take a look into the options.
The option we're going to have right now is I'm going to read the list of everybody who's here.
Well, that's okay, Donna. I'm making a general comment that
but I think it's a good point. And I mean, I'm happy to read it. Ann Thaxter, Beth Wiles, Beverly Envica, Chip Emery, Donna Colbeth, Eliza Jane Adams, Gina Ross, Gloria Brown, Jackie Trask, Paul Boleska, Rod Harrington, and Suhail Bisharat.
Thank you.
And I'm going to research if there's a way to make that available. I think it might be a setting within within Zoom.
Okay, I think that would be great. I feel as though we've lost something. I mean, obviously we've all lost a lot of things this year, but if there's a way to kind of bring that community feel to the meeting back, I think that would be a real positive.
Yeah, thank you
for that suggestion.
And thank you for Suzanne for her tech advice.
Oh, you're welcome, Donna.
That's not usually how it goes in this house, but this year she's taken over.
I have taken over.
Okay, is there anyone else who would like to weigh in on this? We really, as I said, I mean, we're not kidding. We really want your input. Well, I don't see any more hands. So I just want everybody who did not say anything right now not to come back and say they haven't had an opportunity, whatever we decide. So, all right. So I guess the question is really about from right now. Oh, there's something in the chat box.
Yeah, Eliza Jane says, I support the survey and further study.
Okay, so I think that it does make sense. It sounds like people don't think we need to go to the point of having a non-binding referendum. That's great, because that's one less thing that the town staff has to do and we have to think about. Coming up with a Survey Monkey, I think that we can do that. I will contact a couple of people on the board and a couple of people in the community, and we'll kind of throw some ideas around and have something at the next meeting, if that is agreeable to everybody who's on here. David?
I would just like to add to that and make it a motion if need be, that okay. on the agenda for the next meeting, we have a reformation of the broadband committee and a call for participation.
Okay, so do you want to add in that we also at the same time authorize the chair to organize people to come up with a Survey Monkey?
Yes, yeah, let's make that a motion.
Make it together.
Together, know. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a second to that?
Could you re-say your motion?
Motion is first of all, to reconstitute the broadband committee with a charge from the Board of Selectmen at the next meeting, and accepting participants, applicants at that point. And secondly, to task the chair of the Board of Selectmen to drafting a Survey Monkey device to test the waters.
The selectmen or the chair of the selectmen or the chair or the committee?
No, the chair of the board, Donna, through whatever means she wants to put together that Survey Monkey. And secondly, that on the next agenda would be basically, as I say, a call to join the broadband committee, which would then be circulated and constituted and populated like any other committee.
I'll second.
Okay, thank you very much, Bo.
Sorry for the long second.
Is there anyone else on the board who wants to say anything? I'm going to give that audience that's so quiet tonight one more chance. Okay, anybody in the audience? If there's anyone who thinks this is a bad idea, will you please tell us? You can do it in the chat box. Because I would rather have it come out now rather than later. So if we don't see anything, David, is something in the chat?
Nope. The only thing that's in the chat is that Chip is saying that the viewing screen may depend on it being a desktop or tablet.
Okay.
We're going to review that.
Okay. So I'm going to call for a vote. Does anybody need Christine to read that again? No. Jay?
I'd like to hear it again.
Okay.
It seems to have morphed a great deal.
Thank you, Jay, for that. Well, I'm going to listen to it again, of course, in for exact wording. But basically what David was saying was that he would like the next agenda to reconstitute the broadband committee and charge them with no charge
to the broadband committee yet.
Reconstitute the broadband committee and authorize the chair, being Donna Damon, to draft a Survey Monkey device to test the waters, is basically what I have written down right now.
Yeah, I think you got it.
And that wouldn't be just me writing it. I would reach out to Aaron Rue, who volunteered, and anybody else, some of the other people.
And speaking of Aaron, we have a recommendation to conduct the survey first, then discuss the broadband committee. I disagree with that. I'd like to at least get the ball rolling to get the broadband committee up and running by the time we have results from the survey back. The survey is not a go, no go on the whole process, as far as I'm concerned.
Jay?
I guess my question is the Survey Monkey piece that you want to put out, that's going to be the determining. It seems to have picked up a more major role or something in this
process. I think what Aaron was suggesting before is that maybe we come up with some questions. And, you know, if we come up with questions and if it seems like it's a waste of time, we can decide that at the next meeting.
But right. The survey will have already been done at that point.
It would just be a draft. The board's going to approve whatever before it goes out.
It might be a waste of time, but the idea would be to at least get the ball rolling on creating a committee. If that survey monkey comes back and says that nobody wants broadband on Chibig, then we'll immediately disband the committee.
I think that we can kind of do this parallel. I'm going to think about how we can do these, because I think that at the next meeting, all we're doing is saying that we want to set up a committee, or we want to advertise, and we're also saying we're going to do a survey. So both of those can be approved at that time. We won't have a committee because we don't have any people, because we're just going to authorize advertising for some. So I think we're all set. If people in the next 2 weeks change their minds, that's fine too. All right, everybody ready for a vote? Mr. Beaupre?
Yes.
Mr. Corson?
No.
Mr. Dyer?
Yeah.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Ms. Damon is yes. So it's 4-1. All right, and now we're going to move on to the cemetery. And we need to elevate, or whatever you call it, Beth Wiles, Gloria Brown, and Ann Thaxter.
Yeah, I'm going to do that right now.
To be panelists. And they're going to walk us through what they want to do here.
Okay, they should all be available to speak.
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, good evening, everyone. You can't see me, but I did have a question before I started this. I was told to wear my Zoom shirt. So I hope that some of you remember Zoom. Justin, you can remember Zoom. They had striped shirts on. I was told I had to wear one tonight. But anyway, enough of me trying to be funny. It's nice to see you all. Well, I see you. You don't see me. But anyway. Good evening. Gloria, Ann, and I are here this evening to represent the town's cemetery committee. We are here to give you a brief update on the changes the committee has made to the cemetery's rules and regulations, the cemetery's rates, to show a breakdown of cost, as well as to introduce a procedure, including a form, to reclaim old lots or plots by the town of Chibig. So first, I'd like to update you with the progress of one of our goals. It's been almost 3 years since we started a project to improve the mapping of the Chibig Cemetery. We do have maps of all the cemetery, but they're in segments, and some of them are done years and years ago, and it moves right up. So our goal has been to have one cemetery map that we all could use and understand. We enlisted Boundary Solutions' Dave Bouffard, who I feel you folks have had him work for some of the town projects, to help us with this mapping. The end result, again, will be one entire map of the cemetery. We decided that this project would be done in phases, incorporating a phase by a budget year. We have started with the newest portion of the cemetery, or the portion nearest the transfer station road. With Dave's help, lots have been properly ID'd, corrected if necessary, and marked or pinned. We have reconfigured the cremation garden for added space, and when the project is complete, the end result should show more spaces available as we see in the current cemetery. In your packet, you receive the cemetery rate page that is posted on the town web. As you can see, we felt it was helpful to show a burial breakdown so people would understand the cost of the actual burial and the included perpetual care cost. We also added at the bottom a fee for deed transfers. The changes we have made to the rules and regs will provide consistency in procedures. Recently, our superintendent was asked by a descendant to provide a deed of an original owner. Based on this, we felt we could easily tweak the procedures we had incorporated in August of 2017 to meet that request, better known as the Carol Fuller procedure. I'm now going to turn this over to Gloria and let her explain the process and the importance of this procedure. Thank you.
Thanks,
go
Becky.
Ahead, Gloria.
Hi, everybody. Good to see you. When I first read about this recent request that Beth just mentioned, I looked at the plot in my cemetery database and found the original owner, Aunt Addie Hill, had purchased two plots. I also checked my genealogy file and found that Addie Hill had two other sons besides David's grandfather. We're talking about David Hill. Sorry to use you as an example, but needs must.
Glad to be a guinea pig.
Okay. So because there were other children of the original owner, there may be other descendants. And at that point, we proceeded to the Carol Fuller process, which is already in our rules and regs, and it's a way of clarifying plot ownership. And we had brought this process to the board in August of 2017. Beth might have already mentioned that. So I pulled and reviewed the paper plot files from the town office and went up to the cemetery to satisfy my own curiosity about the second plot that was in Addie Hill's name. And sure enough, it's there. Now here's the really interesting part. Plot number 102 is where David's people are buried. And that's the plot that he knew about. The plot is about half full, also meaning it's half empty. But the plot that goes with the deed that David presented actually belongs to plot 103, which has no burials. So I checked all this out with the old Cumberland Cemetery sales records and found the two entries for Addie Hill and checked the deed language of the next plot in the row, number 104. Then curiosity satisfied, I wrote up my report for the committee. I've also talked with David about the additional plot, about our process. While working with the rules and regs, we realized that perpetual care was mentioned in several places, but not shown on our cemetery rates page. The changes show the breakdown for the rates. It clarifies a couple of items and adds a charge of $25 for the town office to research, review, and produce a new deed for transfers. So if you look at the town of Chibig Island Cemetery rules and regs that were in the packet, I think it's 5 or 6 pages long. And I talked with Donna earlier this evening and we've refined it a little bit further. I'd like to tell you about what those changes are. So if you look at page 2, about halfway down, on the right side, there's a word soul, S-O-L-E. And we're going to take that out entirely and replace it with the letter A. So that it says, if no provision is made in the will and a lineal descendant relative in direct descent from the original owner or a collateral descendant, a relative descended from a brother or sister of the original owner, and so forth. So we're just replacing the word soul with the word A. And then on page 3, it's sort of self-explanatory. It's referring to another section. Oh, there's a typo in that. It reads, if not an owner, grantee, or assignee, section 7D and 3, it should be 7D and E, little letter E, regarding transfers. And then on page 5, we're taking out the bit about at no cost because we've added a fee of $25 for the work. And at the end of D, where it says see section 2, we want it to say see section 2 and cemetery rates. It's just a reference to look at the cemetery rates. And let's see, if you go to the page that says cemetery rates, you can see them broken down. Excuse me, a little explanation about perpetual care being 30% of the total cost of a lot. And there is a $25 fee for deed transfers. There's a little bit of a change in language in that section about how the stones are set and the contractor bills the owner directly. And then in the second half of that page under highlights, we've changed one line to read, cremains may be buried in a container. And that's just updating the language. And I'd like to turn it over to Anne now to talk about the page that's called Reclaiming Graves and Plots. Take it away, Anne.
Okay, thank you.
Before Anne speaks, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. I think because you have public listening to this, it's important that they understand that what is happening, and David, you've agreed to be the guinea pig, that in his request, we're asking that he goes through a process in which the superintendent will notify the public of his request on the town's website and other places. It will be posted on the island, and that interested parties will have at least 15 days to contact the town if they have questions or concerns. And if more than one person claims a lot through this process, all parties must prove their connection to the original owner. And now it's important for all to note that the claimants must reach an amicable decision regarding the use of the lot and file a written and signed agreement with the town clerk before a burial permit will be issued. And should the parties not reach an agreement, the town will not arbitrate and the parties must pursue their claim through legal means. So hopefully this goes smoothly for you, David, but in the event that it doesn't and there is some sort of an issue, it is one that the town will not arbitrate. It will be up to you folks to run that show. So I just thought it was important for, you know, even though we're changing language, that you've got public here to find out what in the world is going on with that. Does that make sense?
it makes sense, but I just question, of the six people who were buried in that plot, four could not claim ownership legally. And I'm thinking that that probably isn't unusual. If people think that that's the family plot and that's where I'm going to be buried, that's where my spouse is going to be buried, and so it happens. I just question whether or not, I don't question the process. The process is appropriate, but will it actually be followed, or will someone monitor when a burial is about to occur that the deceased has privileges to be there?
Maybe that's when I can step in, because that's one of the things that I've had to deal with a bit.
Thank you.
When someone calls and wants to set up a burial, I go and look at the file and try to ascertain who has rights to be here. There have been some instances where the person that's being requested to be buried is not the owner of the plot, but is a family member. And what I try to do, David, is get in touch with the senior member of that family who's still alive, just to kind of make sure it's okay. I certainly don't want to stop the process of burial. It's a difficult enough time for folks who are going through the process to not want to bring it to a halt, but I want to make sure. There is a place on my administrative file piece that I fill in for every burial that asks about a deed. I also make a comment, I've spoken with so-and-so, just so that there's a little bit of background on why or how someone's been buried in a certain plot. I also have requests from people saying, I'd like so-and-so to be buried in a plot. And what I ask them to do is put it in writing, and I will put it into the file. So it, the next time someone wants to be buried in a plot, the permission has already been granted ahead of time.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
System, but it's as best I can sort of do.
Yeah, that's really, it requires best effort, I think, to make sure that there isn't a conflict within the family of some kind. And right. What's interesting about this process, what's our plot? 103, I think it is. I, as far as I've always known in the family history, we had both of those plots together. So I, kind of interesting that 104 never got assigned to anybody. So, but that's okay.
Right. The other thing I wanted to add was Gloria's comments about how we changed the wording just a little bit about the burial of cremains. We used to say that it had to be in a permanent container. Looking at green burials now and a request that we had, we felt it was time to let people with a cremation, because we don't have the problems of sinking like we do with a full burial, that we could let people determine whether they wanted some kind of container or whether they wanted to just put the cremains in the ground or put it into a fabric bag. So we just wanted to kind of let people have a few more choices.
And my last comment is that I really do appreciate the cemetery committee digging into this, because it really has been haphazard over the years. And to add some organization to it, I think is a great accomplishment, and I appreciate the effort.
Good. The thing I'm here to talk about is the paper on reclaiming graves and plots. My main reason for wanting to do this is I'd like to extend the life of the cemetery as it is now. In other words, we have several graves we've located that there are very few people buried in it or none. And so this will be kind of an ongoing slow process where Gloria and I will look at things like finding the other hill gravesite that no one had been buried in. And so these are the kind of things we're trying to determine, and we'll go ahead and try and look at some plots and see whether or not we can reclaim them and then re-put them back into the inventory for further use. I think there was one good suggestion in this form. It's down, just a little ways down, and it's the second paragraph, and it says, on or before the 15th of whatever. And it was suggested that we add in some of the rules. So again, the onus isn't on the town. In other words, instead of assuming it would be just one person that might come forward, we're going into our rules, number 2, F2, and if there's more than one person who claims a lot through lineal or collateral descent, that the parties have to agree. In other words, we're going to do 2, 3, and 4, which puts the claimant at the one that has to determine, that they have to work it out, that the town will not be involved in determining, just as we said in the earlier one. So basically, that's what that's attempting to do, that we can, as I said before, is just extend the life of the cemetery without having to add more land and plots.
And Anne, I want to ask a clarifying question. So what you said was that this is going to be a very deliberate process, one at a time. We're not talking about opening up every plot in the cemetery all at the same time and having...
No.
Yeah, that was my first reaction. I talked to Beth this afternoon. She assured me that wasn't going to happen.
No.
We don't have enough people around here to handle it.
No, it's one at a time. But I thought I'd like to do it, get it started this winter, see how it works. I mean, this is a work in progress. So if this isn't going to work or it raises too many concerns, we'll have to go back. I think it's an education process. So one, that you folks don't get questions like, what the heck are they doing at the cemetery? You know that this is what we're attempting to do. Let's see if there are empty plots or plots that are underutilized. This is all allowed by state statute, by the way. And so there are restrictions as far as what we can do.
And I think it's good that you've tied it to the policies that we already have. Right. So that I think that's going to be good. If I were queen of the world, I would start with the orphan asylum. No, seriously, I would start with that lot because that would be an easy one to do.
I will look into that. I'm not sure because isn't that one, I think in my mind, that's one plot that I'm not sure how many were buried there.
Oh yeah, that's the other question. Do you guys have good enough records to be able to?
Well, in that situation, that's probably a tougher one than when we've got a plot here and there that only has one recorded death or one recorded burial.
David, I have a question. Can the owner of a plot dictate? Hate that word, but. Ensure that only cremains are buried and there wouldn't be any full burials in the family plot? Because I, for one, would like to decree that plot of ours, we don't put a lot of caskets in there. We make more room with more cremations.
I'm certainly all in favor of that. I would think that could be something that you could put in the file that says, you know, these are for cremations. We certainly in the cremation cemetery, that's the way it is. You can have
exactly
and in that plot, and that's it.
That same condition could be put onto a family plot.
More bang for the buck, David?
Yes, yeah. So to speak.
Well, and just because we do have people in the public listening to this, and other people may listen to the recording later. For example, if you have a lot and your grandmother and grandfather are buried there, we can put 2 cremations on each one, each the grandmother and on the grandfather, the way our rules are written right now.
It's one on top of a full burial, but I need to
check. It's only one?
I think so.
I read it today and I thought it said two.
That's two. I thought it was one. I mean, there's some different things that a mother can be buried with children.
Right, but when you're the cremation, I'm pretty sure I read that today, but.
Okay.
Yes, it's two.
Yeah, I think it's two. And you can have 3 if there's not a full burial.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, I'm just, so that there are ways to actually utilize this, the other space to David's point.
I'm all in favor of that. That's what will keep extending the life of the cemetery.
To answer David's question, I think all you would have to do is write a statement and have it put in the file.
Right.
Thank you.
Is there anyone who has any questions of anybody on the cemetery committee at this point? Anybody on the board? Jay?
The thing that struck me is something very different than what we've been talking about. It's the fact that the cost of perpetual care seems to me to be very low. And it's sort of like we ought to raise the prices so we have more money in there for perpetual care.
Well, I can tell you that it's been the practice since we were part of Cumberland and since we've been in our own town that the town basically has always maintained the cemeteries through the regular budget. And the perpetual care money goes into a fund that they can use only the interest from to do things like reset stones and that kind of thing.
Right, but the point that I'm making it, the cost of maintaining the cemetery, which is the perpetual care bit, you know, is being way undervalued in the pricing system.
I think we've tried to make it so it's affordable to the people who live here, and so far I think their budget has been working for them. I don't know, they can speak to it.
Donna, I just like to add that we certainly could do some research and get back to you folks with, you know, write you a memo or something to find out what other towns to make sure we're in the right, doing the right actual cost that is the right thing for the island. We can check on that, make sure we're up to date.
Just for
David's showing his deed.
Here's our original deed. You'll notice it's handwritten. It's dated 1910, so it's only 110 years old.
And so, it's really interesting because I have one from the 1890s and they were a form. So it varied from, you know, whatever they were doing. Okay, is there anyone else on the board who has a question, Mark?
Ann and Beth and Gloria and whoever else participates on this committee. Is there any room for expansion of the cemetery? And is there any plans to take a look at that?
We have when I came on to the committee, and I can't tell you how many years ago it was, but there was actually a survey done, and there is a piece of land in back of the church, and it would be abutting Steve Williams and Patty Rich's area, and that place has been surveyed to add additional graves and plots on. What we're trying to do now was, Mark, we were uncomfortable with the layout of the new part or the part by the transfer station road, and we felt it was important before we attempt to make any new lots is to see what did we actually have there and could we make that better. And then this part where Anne has come up with the form and, you know, talking about people being buried on plots, you know, if we promote a little bit of that, there's some of us here who have family plots, you do, and we certainly could think about that part too. But to answer your question, yes, there is a surveyed piece where I said.
Yeah, thank you. That makes sense, looking into the newest part over near the transfer station road first. Thank you.
All right, anyone else before I go to the audience or the attendees? Okay, anyone in the attendee group? This is a quiet attendees tonight.
Well, we've lost a few too. We're down to 10 and no hands are raised.
Nobody, okay. Well, thank you. I mean, I think the cemetery committee is doing a great job. They are taking it seriously and you know, this is a really important committee because, let's face it, you know, when someone passes away, you don't want to have any drama. And And by having this all spelled out ahead of time, it's really good. And, you know, we kind of joke about Carol Fuller, and who was, whose relatives came from Shebig, and she came to us and wanted to have her parents buried with Aunt Al Wilder. This is a true story. And, you know, we tried to figure out how to make it work. And then we realized it was really important to have this, not just as a one-shot deal, but to have it so that it was part of the policy, so that everyone would know how it would work. And so far, so good.
Donna, I see that Jackie has her hand up, and I'll allow her to talk here. I just wanted to mention, I think Jay was mentioning the cost. The cost in 1910 was $4 for our one or two plots, depending on which is really the case. So there isn't some inflation there.
In 1953, it was $40 for an eight-person plot.
Jackie's, she should talk now if she still wishes to.
Hi, I had a question. I think I heard Beth reference the term cremation garden. And could you explain that? I had not heard that before. I mean, in reference to Shebig.
So, would you like to explain that, Annie, or do you, why don't you take a stab at it?
Sure. Jackie, I'd love to take you up there and show you where it is. It's up on the right-hand far corner, closest to the transfer station on that road. There's a section that was laid out, I'm not sure how many years ago. It's restricted in that it's two burials per grave and a small flat stone only. There's a little bit of planting there that's kind of pathetic, which we're working on. We've got a lot of things we're trying to work on. And so I'd be glad to show you where it is. There are a few burials there, not a lot, but they're there, and there are some stones there. So I'll take you up in the spring.
Thank you. I actually, when you talk, you know, about it, I remember when I was there with, you know, my neighbor with you. I remember you showed us that area.
Okay. Anyone else in the audience have a question about the cemetery? Bo and then David.
Do we need to have a motion to accept the new policy or their changes?
We could have a motion to accept their report. We don't have to accept their changes. Okay. So if you want to make a motion to accept their report, that would be great.
I mean, do we have to? I'm just curious.
No, we don't. I'm just saying.
No, you don't have to. It's not an ordinance change.
Okay. Thank you.
David.
Well, that was my my question. I was going to make a motion to do the same. But if we don't need it, we don't need it.
Okay. So thank you very much. And we look forward to hearing from you the next time you have a unique situation come before you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, the next thing on the agenda, 21-128, is to discuss a proposed recycling contract with EcoMaine. I'm gonna turn this over to Justin, and he can bring us all up to speed on it.
Yeah, so I just wanted to put this on your radar screen. I don't think tonight that we're prepared for you to take any action, but I just wanted to bring this to your attention. The EcoMaine solid waste and recycling contract is set to expire in March of next year, so it's coming upon us. They have indicated that our current recycling contract cannot be renewed as it is currently drafted. And that is basically due to the changes in the recycling market. The Chinese are no longer accepting recyclable materials from anywhere really, but specifically the United States. And therefore they have little or no value anymore in compared to what they used to. So when you look at the tonnage fees for recycling, they have two proposals. One is $95 a ton, which is significantly more than now, with a profit share of 80% at the end of the year. Instead of right now, there's a profit share on sort of a moving basis as we move through and receive their tipping fees. They're not willing to do that anymore, I think, because the risk to them is too high. So they're basically saying that they want you to pay sort of an upfront fee of $95 a ton every month, and then at the end of the year, they'll average what their profit margin is, and then they'll share some of that back. The big change is that, which they indicate in their letter, it's never happened, but if it fell below zero, that the town would be on the hook for the 80% profit share. Basically, they wouldn't give you any of the $95 back. The other option would be to just pay $145 a ton and not deal with the profit sharing at all, which would provide some consistency. I mean, the town would know exactly, or would know relatively, what it would pay every year without that profit sharing at the back end, but it would cost more. I reached out to Pine Tree, your old vendor, and I am still in discussions with them. I sent them your tipping information, the amount of tons that you've given them in recycling and in solid waste over the 2019 calendar year. And they followed up with some questions about about the size of our containers and the number of times they're taken off the island. And I haven't had the opportunity to put all that information together. So really at this time, I'm not asking for you to do anything, but just that I wanted you to know that this is coming up and I'm doing some research, and that I will be bringing this back to you at a future meeting, hopefully with more solid numbers from what another vendor might be able to provide in comparison to what EcoMaine is offering you now or will under the new contract. And if you have any particular goals or anything that you want me to look into, please let me know that now, and I will I'll be sure to incorporate that into any information I bring back to you for an actionable item.
Thank you. I think that one of the reasons I wasn't on the board at the time, David probably was, Mark may have been, or Bo, but that they switched to EcoMaine was because they felt it was environmentally a better way to go as opposed to saving money. So, you know, I suppose we have to weigh both of those at the time. You know, so thank you for looking into both options.
Yeah, so basically when you look at, if you're talking about environmental standards, EcoMaine and Pine Tree both offer a single sort recycling, which is obviously easier for residents to just throw everything in one bin and let them deal with it on the other end, opposed to splitting everything up into different bins. A waste to energy facility is considered to be slightly higher on the green scale, if you will, than a landfill. Pine Tree is basically going to landfill your solid waste, and EcoMaine burns it in a trash to energy facility. So that is considered slightly higher on the scale of green. So that would probably be a consideration that you would have about whether it was greener than going to Pine Tree.
Thank you. Anyone have any questions of Justin? He's going to bring this back to us.
Yes.
Anything you want him to check into? Okay, seeing none from the board, anyone in the audience? I don't see any hands up. So thank you again, Justin, for taking the ground running here with some of these projects. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So the next item is communications. I had a thank you note from Marjorie regarding her bag of Shebig swag that she really appreciated. And that's all I've had for communications, except the letter from the people on the West End, which I already read. Did anyone else have any communication that they want to share? Okay, seeing none. Let's move on to approve the minutes from December 2nd, 2020. Could I have a motion?
So moved.
Okay, Jay's moved.
Who would I second.
And Bo seconded. Were there any corrections, omissions, or changes that you wanted to make? Anyone? All right, seeing no hands, I'll do a roll call vote. Mr. Beaupre?
Yes.
Mr. Corson?
Yes.
Mr. Dyer?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Damon is yes. Okay, so now other business. Is there any other business to come before the board that board members have? Bo?
I just wanted to say that the last meeting I spoke about Dave Stevens, his water issue and stuff. Me and Justin went to go look at it. I actually completed the work, creating a swale on his private side. I was there. It took me 5 minutes to excavate the side of the road, and the town supplied the riprap to put in the area. Justin, I believe, has looked at it since it was done, and Chuck has looked at it also once it was done. So.
And did you get a check plus or a check minus for the work after they looked at it?
I don't know. They walked away and shook their head. So I don't know what that. No, they both said it looked good. Dave Stevens is happy with it right now. Hopefully he'll manage some of his water problems.
Okay. Thank you. Nice public-private partnership. Yes, Mark.
Very quickly, this morning, Doug Fowler, the new road foreman from All States Asphalt, came over on the 8:15 boat with Justin. Justin, Doug, and I rode around in the town vehicle. We have looked at Chandler's Cove Road, Old Cart Road, and the beginnings of Fenderson and Caps Road. Doug is going to supply us with a number that we'll be able to use, at least budgetarily, if nothing else, when we get ready to do our budget for next year for resurfacing those roads. So we'll have at least that information to go along with all of our other lovely dredging numbers and all of that.
Thank you. Speaking of dredging, have we heard anything from the Army Corps, Justin, since you've been here?
No, I have had no communication. Would you like me to reach out to them again?
Yes, that's a good idea. And I will email Mark Hable as well. So if you and I both go at it, I will try that tomorrow because we've already set a date for the money and we haven't even seen the report yet.
Yes.
So we've done our side and he's late on his side. So that would be really helpful. And it might be a good idea, Christine, if you can send out a copy of the, again, which you've already given us, but the budget schedule for the upcoming year, just so that Mark can take a look at it and we can all start adding it to our new calendars, because for Christmas we'll get new calendars. So we can plug those dates in.
Okay.
Not wait for the packet, but just when you have a minute.
Yep, I'll email it out.
Yep. Bo?
I'm thinking maybe we should send them the Army Corps a list of the cancellations we've been having lately. We seem to be having more and more and more cancellations.
Yeah, that's good data. This week is because it's such low draining tides and the time of day. This week is the most dramatic. So that would be a good idea. Justin and I can just go back and look at Beverly's website and CTC's website and plug those numbers in.
And I just to add on to that, somebody brought up, I can't remember who I was talking to, and they asked, what is the plan for emergencies?
I know there was, when Dave Steve, well, I shouldn't say who went. When somebody had a rescue, Long Island was over, and they took them directly to Portland from Chandler's Cove. And they actually, somebody told me who was involved in it, that they got there faster than they would have if they'd gone from Cousins Island.
All right, thank you.
David.
Yeah, that note that you're putting together to the Army Corps, please stress that this affects people's ability to get to work, literally. And
Now, Nancy, for example, she has not been able to work and she doesn't know she'll be able to. Which is it? You can't get to work in the morning or you can't get home in the evening. I guess it's worse to not get home in the evening, but either way, it's a real hardship for people trying to actually work.
Yeah, you know, we've been through this with them over and over again.
I know, I know. Let's just keep pushing on them.
I know. I'm not sure what the holdup is because, I mean, I had a person-to-person telephone conversation with him. And, you know, I just am unsure what's going on there. Okay, anyone else have anything that they'd like to bring up? Okay, seeing none, perhaps we could have a motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn.
Jay moves we adjourn. Is there any, David second? Second. All right, we'll do a quick roll call. Mr. Beaupre, are you going to say yes. No? Oh, okay. Mr. Corson.
Yes.
Mr. Dyer.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes, and our audience is going away very quickly, it seems.
I know.
Eating a hasty retreat.
It's like
rats. Motion to adjourn, it always goes quickly.
Yeah, rats desert a sinking ship. I think that's what's happening. Yes, and I vote yes that we adjourn. So good night, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. We'll see you all at the beginning of next year.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Merry Christmas.
Good night. Merry Christmas, all.
Merry Christmas to everyone.